Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew. Roundtable is in studio. Representative Nick Zerwas, comedian Brian Miller. We got a couple of things to get to. Before we do, though, actually, I just kind of said we were going to talk about, and I'm going to deviate. We do have some amazing prizes with the Parody Song Contest, of which you'll get a preview here in just a few minutes.
Tickets to the Vikings-Bengals game this Sunday at U.S. Bank Stadium. Should be a good game. Nice bounce-back opponent for Minnesota after that disappointing Carolina game last week.
That's fantastic. I'm looking forward to the game this weekend.
Yeah, me
that's
too.
That's going to be good.
Me
that's going to be good. Yeah, so we
have Packers-Steelers after that.
I am loving this season. This Viking season has been so much fun, and yeah. and literally the way the schedule has played out, it's made every game feel really important, and I've looked forward to every single game. And you mentioned the late game on Sunday, the Patriots Steelers. I mean, that is a huge game for playoff implications.
Yep.
Go Pittsburgh.
And Packers Panthers, because if the Packers win that, then Rodgers probably plays against us next week.
Yeah,
a lot going on this Sunday.
I don't know if you guys know this, but Miami beat the Patriots last week.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, they did.
Well, you know,
I think all the Patriots tripped and fell. I didn't watch the game, but I'm pretty sure they probably broke all their ankles because I don't know how else the Dolphins beat them.
They outplayed them. They were the better team.
Well, I'll tell you,
it's not true. It's just not true.
If you have Jay Cutler, you get 2 free games a year where he plays amazing and he wins you the game. You always get 2 games. That's mostly all you get.
Yeah.
But
well,
there you go. They used it wisely.
Pretty much.
No. You guys keep saying that, but it's not like Tom Brady's ever going to amount to anything. You act like it's a big deal that Jay Cutler had a good game against Brady, for crying out loud, right? And I mean, put him next to that guy on the Browns, and they're just, you know, 2 peas in a horrible football pod.
There were high expectations for Brady. He really, really did kind of turn out to be a dud.
That's a bummer. Did anybody see? I know we talked about it a lot. But did anybody see the end of that Packers the Cleveland game in overtime?
Oh, yeah.
That was the most, like, I don't watch a ton of football, but in overtime with the Browns quarterback, and he just chucked it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, he just got nervous and scared. It's like, you're an NFL quarterback. You're not supposed to just, huh! That's what I do, for crying out loud.
Yeah, if you want someone to nearly wet themselves and then try to throw a ball, you should give me a couple minutes.
It was insane. All right, before we get to this battle with the appointment of Tina Smith to replace Senator Al Franken, just a couple of quick things. I found this interesting. Because I never really thought about if you're the owner of a franchise, but the franchise overall begins to hurt, that you would be caught in that as a franchise owner. Have you heard about this thing going on with Subway?
I was going to say Subway is the example because they had famously, I don't know if you heard, some PR troubles a couple of years ago.
Right. Well, despite plummeting sales, Subway franchise owners are protesting the corporate management's decision to bring back the $5 footlong promotion as they believe it's just a gimmick that's going to further slice into their profits.
Yeah.
Can you imagine just being a franchise owner and you're having to be forced now to go with this? And you're like,
protesting the crappy quality of their overall product.
Oh, maybe they should start with the fact that their bread smells like the Pillsbury Doughboy took a dump.
Wow. Oh, there goes our Subway.
Yeah, seriously. There goes that
I'm angling for the Blimpies money, though. See, it's all part of a plan.
We work so hard on that spec spot, too. Gosh darn it, I like me some Subway. November 30th, the owners of the fast food chain told employees via memo that they're pouring $25 million into marketing through spring 2018 in hopes of boosting traffic across the restaurant's 44,000 locations. I would...
What's the message?
Well,
have a fresh sandwich not brought to you by a pedophile?
TM.
They also announced the
Subway pedophile free since 2011.
Then Roy Moore walks in, you're like, dang it.
The $4.99 footlong sandwich promotion will hit menus again as of January. Meanwhile, over 400 franchise owners have already signed the petition protesting the return of the special. The national promotion focus over the past 5 years has decimated us and left many franchisees unprofitable and even insolvent.
Wow.
If you took that $25 million and just, I don't know, I had to do the math, but I'd be curious if you just divided that money up and then just sent it to the franchise owners and said, you guys do with it what you want to do with it in terms of promotion. I bet that would be more valuable.
I've always I think that makes a lot of sense in a lot of franchise situations. A lot of these national promotions, it's impossible for them to really cater to whatever the competitive situation is in their individual markets. I think that money would be much wiser spent by local franchise owners.
Strongly disagree. Bring back the $5 footlong, because literally it is worth $3. So they're still making money. I mean,
are they upset because of the ridiculous controversy that popped up because it's not really a foot long?
No, I think they're just upset because they have to charge cheaper prices for these sandwiches, and they can't make the money. The management insists the local owners aren't seeing the bigger picture. The shareholders do understand the magnitude of the situation, according to the CEO, added that most locations do support the return of the $5 footlongs.
Yeah, because even when you go into the $5 footlong, I'm always suckered into like 7 cookies.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
That's the idea, right? You buy a couple of sodas or whatever.
Yeah. I'll have the macadamia nut and a bag of Sun Chips. Yeah, All right.
Well, this is a great opportunity for people to do something I've always wanted to do, which is be an owner they have a promotion. Promotion's not all participating events. Right? I've always wanted to be a non-participating event. Like, I always wanted to be like a McDonald's and like, yeah, we're selling hot dogs and shoes. We're not participating in any of the rest of it.
Well, that's... You've watched...
You're a rebel, you know.
You've watched the movie, was it The Founder?
Yeah. You're the one who got me to watch it. It's great.
That's such a great one about Ray Kroker from McDonald's. And he talks, in the movie, talks about when McDonald's was first kind of being rolled out to the franchises, that he was showing up, and some of them were serving, like, fried chicken.
Yeah.
No! Stick to the program.
Yeah.
So we'll use the roundtable to get a definitive answer on this next question out of the Pioneer Press. So, guys, and gal, Sam, if you want to get involved in this, do we have a Minnesota-style pizza?
Hmm. We do now.
Cheese curd pizza.
We do now.
According to
Red Savoy, we have a Minnesota style pizza now.
They've declared it.
Yep.
Can we guess what's on it?
Sure. Go ahead.
Wild rice.
No, it doesn't have specific toppings.
Right.
It's a pizza style. So, like, you know, you think of New York pizza, right? It's the it doesn't matter what the toppings are. It's the big, thin, triangle cut.
Right.
You kind of have to fold it up to eat it.
In Chicago, would be, like, thick, would be, like, deep dish
pie
kind of stuff.
With the sauce on the top.
This is twice as expensive, and you're still hungry when you're done.
That's called sushi.
Oh, my bad.
The Minnesota-style pizza, according to the Savoy team, are thin crust, square cut, loads of toppings, cheese, and spicy passive-aggressive sauce.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. It'd be funny.
All right, and here's beef number one with this Minnesota-style pizza. There is really nothing more passive-aggressive than square-cut pizza. I cannot stand square-cut pizza.
Yes.
Don't cut your pizza into stupid squares. It has a crust for a reason.
Like, what's the point?
Because you're supposed to hold it by the crust.
And you end up like, somebody's going to get stuck with, like, the three pieces in the middle that are just gooey cheese, and it's just terrible and hard to hold and hard to eat.
I like the
middle falls
pieces.
Off.
I like the middle pieces. But I will say this, though. When I see square-cut pizza, I just instantly flash back to terrible school lunch pizza.
Yeah.
You know, like the roof shingle with, like, the thick white coating of, like, rubbery cheese.
I loved terrible square-cut school pizza. I love square-cut pizza.
Why?
Because there's not the crust there.
I love the crust.
I can trick my mind into thinking I'm not having as many carbs and I can eat more. That's why God made napkins, for crying out loud. I like it square cut. It's all pizza, no crust.
Well, that's right, eating the napkins.
No, I'm just abusing it because you don't have the crust to hold on to. To Drew, the crust there for a reason.
Yeah, that's why the crust exists. And the crust tastes good. I mean, when you have a quality pizza, part of that is having quality dough, and the crust tastes awesome.
Not to be a conspiracy theorist, but let me go out on a limb here and say that perhaps is it that Red Savoy pizza makes square cut pizza.
Yeah, they've declared themselves.
Yes.
Like this is the flagship. This is the epitome. This is what Minnesota style pizza. They call it soda style. Soda style pizza is.
Somebody's branding team is really working overtime.
It reminds me of that episode from the Office when he wants to declare bankruptcy. It's like, how does that work? He's like, we declare that we have Minnesota style pizza.
Dilly
dilly.
They say we've won awards for best Minnesota pizza, but no one really knew what that was, so we claimed it. And it was. I mean, kudos to them. I mean, you know, nobody had declared themselves Minnesota-style pizza. They do have kind of a unique style, and they're very popular. So they said, you know what?
So it's not
this
cool.
is now Minnesota-style.
See, it should be Minnesota-style pizza the second day when you pull it out of the fridge and eat it cold.
All right.
That should be the Minnesota-style pizza.
Well, I declare we're Minnesota-style radio. That's what I was
Why not?
That's what I'm just making that declaration.
TM. Trademark.
Trademark. Right there. Stamped it and done. Yeah.
Like a good neighbor, but with a cold beer in the fridge.
They do say, though, that you cannot have a Minnesota-style pizza if it's cut into triangles. And to that, I say hooey.
That's ridiculous.
I say hooey. You cut your pizza into triangles. That's how pizza's cut.
Yeah, the other...
Cutting it into squares is what ISIS does.
Why would you cut a circle into squares?
That's not what ISIS does.
Like, it made sense when Pizza Hut had the big rectangles.
Yeah. Anybody do that with pie? Anybody
you just won the argument. That's it. Case closed.
Cut it into squares and be like, no, you eat it like this. No, nobody does that with pie. Why would you do it with pizza?
That was your Clarence Darrow moment right there. You just nailed it. Or Johnny Cochran. If the pie don't fit, you must have quit.
It's like the weirdest game of Trivial Pursuit ever.
When I get home today, we have pumpkin pie. I'm just going to cut a piece into a square just to prove you wrong.
You and your family will check you into a home.
You don't understand. They don't care. They buy the Costco. My wife and my 11-year-old, they buy the Costco pumpkin pie, and they don't even slice it. They just open the package up. They just go right at it. Exactly what happens. Yeah. There's no rhyme or reason.
I respect that.
Chaos.
Actually.
I don't care. You show up at Thanksgiving. Grandma cuts the pie in squares. You're like, oh, it's time.
You're totally right.
It's time. We got to check her into a home.
ISIS has arrived.
Why do you want to be on the same page as ISIS,
John?
It's
true. They don't. ISIS doesn't eat pizza.
If they did, it would be cut into squares.
If you want to avoid the carbs, just do what my dad does and only eat the cheese.
Yeah, I've done that.
I've done that.
That's the only way my dad eats pizza.
Still fat.
Yeah. Am I?
Hey, jury's still out. Let's do this for another 20, 30 years. See how it goes.
Just eat only cheese off of pizzas for like 20 years, and then we'll find out.
Oh, my God.
Coming up. Since we're wrapping up pizza talk, out of the Pioneer Press next. Shortly after Tina Smith was named successor to Al Franken, a legal battle erupted over the control of the Minnesota Senate and the state Supreme Court might have to settle it. We'll give you the latest details on this. We'll get the thoughts of comedian Brian Miller and Representative Nick Zerwas. That is on the way.
Yeah, but first we're going to do a preview of this week's parody song contest. 5 parody song snippets, all referencing stories we covered this week. The first caller after 8:30. Don't call now. First caller after 8:30 that can correctly identify all 5 stories is going to win a pair of tickets to this weekend's Vikings game against the Bengals at US Bank Stadium. Here is your preview.
Somebody's going to use the force. Maybe Mace Windu. Somebody's going to kill a droid. But not R2-D2. A Democrat on the Senate floor. It's Doc Jones and not Roy Moore. The driver on the bus does not exist. Not exist, not exist. The driver on the bus does not exist. Hope it don't mow you down. Is that Rock and E.T., baby? An alien spaceship, maybe? Or are those scientists crazy? Is that Rock and E.T., baby? Our lieutenant governor is Governor Dayton's pal. But soon that seat will be empty, 'cause she is going to D.C. to replace Al.
Woo. So 651-989-5855 is the phone number you're going to want to use after 8:30 to correctly identify those parody songs.
Do you think the guy that sings that, do you think he's really pleased when he gets your email? Or do you think he's really like,
I can't tell.
He just brought it back this week.
That was A+, though. That was an A+ one.
Yeah, that was good. That was
worthy
stuff.
Of the Vikings tickets.
That's another one where I'm like, I need the full version of a couple of those songs. 651-989-5855. You're listening to Justice and Drew.
Justice and
a lot of Twitter commentary regarding Minnesota-style pizza. Nate, friend of the show, and a chef. Mm. Says, and here I thought Minnesota style pizza was always just a bit more socially conscious and fair trade. However, I understand the slicing of the square slices on a round pizza. There is nothing more passive aggressive than that. Mm. It really is. I mean, that is a passive aggressive way to serve a pizza. It's like, here, you want a slice? It's not really a slice, though.
Or you get the weird little slice, like the very edge of the circle where it's just a crescent of crust tiniest fragment of cheese.
You take that back. That is my favorite piece.
It's so subjective.
Well, we can split a pizza perfectly. I'll have the middle. You have those weird corner pieces that maniacs like, and then we'll both be happy.
Yeah, those four corner pieces.
Although, to be fair, that's relative to you, that's a slice.
Yes.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
No, it's those four pieces. It's two meals.
I thought you maybe built a lean-to out of them and lived underneath them.
And for me, when I see square sliced pizza, I go, I haven't had that in a while, and I get excited. I like the square sliced pizza. It's like art, man. It's all subjective. Yeah, just saying.
Another listener on Twitter says, once again, John Justice is right and Andrew Lee is wrong. Square cut pizza is my favorite. I'm a born and raised Minnesotan.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but I like it. I change it up.
Yeah, you like everything.
That is not true.
No, it is.
I barely like you right now.
No, you like that.
I may not like you even more less than a moment.
You even like that terrible new Star Wars movie.
You haven't seen a single one, little man, so I'm not even going to...
You could cook a pizza with this heat.
Entertain that. You're
getting coal-fired in here.
I do not like everything. It's just that's not true. We're going to leave it at that.
There's a couple of things that you are not crazy about, but you'll tolerate just about anything.
What's the worst pizza topping?
Oh, do we even want to unpack this? Again, it's also subjective. Like, do you guys put pineapple
on your pizza, then you're a maniac.
Okay, then I'm a maniac because I love pineapple on my pizza.
Pineapple and ham is amazing.
Mm. Yeah. No. Canadian bacon.
Well, here's, okay, it's its own thing. I'll give you this. It's its own thing. Don't tell someone you're getting pizza and then show up with pineapple on your pizza.
Yeah.
You've ruined their day.
If you said,
I'm getting pineapple pizza. Okay.
Yeah, Hawaiian style.
It should come with its own warning label. The box should be a different box. It should be sold at a different restaurant in a state that's not this one.
I agree completely.
I'll give you strangest topping on a pizza that I love.
Uh-huh.
Cottage cheese.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. Cottage cheese on a slice of pepperoni pizza or a square. So good. Yeah.
You just like daub it on yourself?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of maniacs, cook it with it.
You just dab it on.
People do that with ranch.
Dabble to you.
Which I find sort of like, you need ranch dressing on pizza?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just dip it with the crust.
The only thing you don't need ranch dressing on is pizza.
Yeah, you don't need it, but it certainly does.
It is good.
It is good. It is unnecessary.
You can learn a lot about a person by what kind of pizza and how they like to eat their pizza.
Mm. My wife requires a gallon of ranch with her pizza.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, no, that's a strong requirement. No, one of the best odd toppings out of the Elk River area, Sarpino's, has a really strong macaroni and cheese pizza.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
Sarpino's pizza's fantastic.
I've seen a few of those mac and cheese pizzas. They're really good.
They're very good.
Any place that puts together a Greek pizza is thumbs up in my book. You'll get the artichoke hearts, the gyro meat, the little globs of feta. Oh, my goodness. Delicious.
Yes. At Pizzeria Lola, and I think also at Young Joni, they do a Korean barbecue pizza.
Day Block, Day Block Brewing Company has a banh mi pizza. It's the banh mi sandwich, but maybe pizza form. It's really, really good.
Let's go and talk with Mark in Lakeville. Good morning, Mark. Welcome to Twin Cities News Talk.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, man.
Listen, I know we're not about giving free plugs on the radio, but there's a pizza joint in White Bear Lake that has truly authentic Chicago-style deep dish for all those transplanted Chicagoans out there like me.
Yeah. What's it called?
Go ahead.
It's called Pizzeria Pezzo.
All right. I love a good Chicago-style pizza. And it is hard to find an authentic Chicago-style pizza.
Let's just go around the room real quick. And Sam, you too. What's the go-to? You're going to get pizza. And not going out to eat, but just getting it for home.
Yeah.
What are you grabbing?
I don't have a lot of options where I live. Right. So we're a Domino's family.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Brian Miller?
Domino's Deluxe.
It is what it is, man.
You know what?
I got no argument with Domino's. I think they've done a really nice job in the past few years. They've improved their quality quite a bit.
Domino's hand-tossed crust. Is pretty dang
good. What's number one in your army at your house, you're bringing home? What's making everybody in your household happy pizza wise
My dad thinks that anything And like anything on pizza, but except for cheese, like
right.
only he's an only cheese guy. He thinks that it is just like
he just has cheese,
just cheese.
What? Where do you guys? What brand? Who are you bring? What are you bringing home that makes everybody happy?
Just get a frozen pizza. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, we get it wherever. Yeah. Probably. I mean, we have a big family, so usually you're gonna have to go with Little Caesars because you're gonna like economically feed.
True story.
An
yeah, there's a lot of them Sansa beers.
Yeah.
Brian Miller.
I have a wonderful. My neighborhood is perfectly located where I'm a few blocks from Luce, so I'm driving home for
nice.
Anytime.
Nice.
I can grab a slice. But we also have Broder's down the street. They have a fantastic pizza they deliver. And there's Black Sheep if you're feeling the coal fired pizza down the
nice.
Way.
Yeah, Black Sheep's good.
I live in a really nice pizza
wow,
zone.
Wow, you're like in the Nexus.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The axis of pizza.
Yeah. I'm in the Venn diagram. Yeah.
I know where we're having our Christmas party this year.
Yeah, my front porch.
Nick Zeroas?
So in Elk River, there's a Pompeii pizza that does an unbelievable Neapolitan.
Is okay. it burned?
Pizza. It's really good. It's not.
The famous volcano.
It's not.
It's a dad joke.
Yeah, that was.
That was good.
It's actually not ash covered. So Pompeii Pizza, and then otherwise, right downtown Elk River at the Sunshine Depot, the Depot Special. And they have these huge pizza ovens on the back, and it's probably the best pizza on Elk River. It's pretty awesome.
We, every Friday night is pizza night, and we rotate between Papa Murphy's, Take Home, and Costco. So actually,
you're a take and bake family.
Yeah, and so tonight, well, the Costco, we get hot. We bring it home.
I do
yeah,
half
yeah.
of that.
So tonight's actually Papa Murphy's. Yeah.
That's not a bad way to go.
Oh,
yeah. It really
what?
Is not.
But Costco pizza for the price is amazing. I love Costco pizza.
I agree.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Especially when you factor in the price. It's, yeah, so, it's so cheap, and it really is
it's
good
really
quality.
Good pizza. Yeah.
That Papa Murphy's pizza is pretty solid.
Yeah, it is.
I got no complaints.
They did really well.
Yeah. Yeah, they know me by name over there.
I'm not a pizza sure. snob, but it is disappointing when you go out for pizza in a new place and it's terrible.
It's so hard to do that wrong.
After that rant about the square slices, you're not a pizza okay. snob.
As long as it's cut in triangles, like a human being would cut it.
Oh, come on.
Ooh, there's that new movie, The Shape of Water. You can make a movie called The Shape of Pizza. it's a love story about you and a pizza.
Shape. It's a triangle.
What has happened? What has happened? We were all excited for the Classic Roundtable this morning. I haven't decided if I still am. All right, Pioneer Press. Legal battle erupts over Tina Smith appointment. Immediately at stake is whether Republicans can maintain their one-vote margin in the Senate. Perhaps a larger issue at stake is the separation of powers between the legislative and executive branches. Things got heated quickly. Jennifer Carnahan, she was on the show, chair of the Republican Party of Minnesota, alleged the Democratic power grab was Governor Mark Dayton's motive. It's all a result of the cascade that began when Dayton named Smith his lieutenant governor. To Franken's seat after his resignation last week amid the accusations of sexual misconduct. When Smith becomes senator, the vacancy in her office shall be filled by the president of the state senate, according to the Minnesota succession plans. And, of course, this is causing problems because that person is Michelle Fischbach, a Republican. And that's weird since Dayton is a Democrat, but the governor said he hoped the two could work together. But now this debate over whether or not she can go and do both jobs. And on the one side, Dayton saying, yes, she can. We've got the legal precedent on us, and on the other side, Fischbach is saying we've got an 1889 or whatever statute. Yeah, 1898 Supreme Court case that says we can.
Dayton is claiming, and Dayton believes that that she needs to step down from the Senate, resign her Senate seat to serve as Lieutenant Governor. Michelle Fischbach is saying nope. I can do both. I highly recommend, if you missed it yesterday, we had brilliant legal minds, Jeff O'Brien and Howard Root, on in the 7 o'clock hour. That is posted up there as a podcast from yesterday's on the iHeartRadio app. Really good segment, and we got their opinions on it. And they were both in agreement that they think that if this does, that it will go to court, first of all, if she continues to try to hold both seats, and that if it does go to court, that that she would prevail. And that she would be able to hold both seats. Now, Nick Zeroas, obviously you're more well versed in this than anybody else in this room. The office of the lieutenant governor, just from a purely like logistical point of view, can somebody fulfill the duties such as they are of the lieutenant governor and be a sitting senator? Just logistically.
So in the Minnesota State Constitution, there are no duties assigned
exactly
to the lieutenant governor. And so, that being said, yes.
Right. You could be a lieutenant governor and hold like four other jobs.
Yeah, yeah. You could do Uber. You could
Fight Squad.
Yeah, you know, whatevs. Now, obviously,
what's the salary for the lieutenant governor?
I think it's about $90,000.
And there's no assigned duty.
What?
Well, your job is to be there, you know, in case.
Well, I can understand, you know, $90,000 to have to deal with Dayton, but, you know, that's understandable.
Can we figure out something for them to be responsible for?
Website duties, blog posts.
So,
yeah.
Check the mail. Ooh, shovel the snow around the Capitol. Someone's got to clean.
Facebook status updates. Something.
So, to be clear, most governors will provide roles and expectations for the lieutenant governor.
Such as in Dayton's case where he said, you do my job.
Yes. So obviously, Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith has had a very robust role within Governor Dayton's administration. Prior to that, in Governor Dayton's first term, Lieutenant Governor Yvonne Prettner-Solon out of Duluth had almost no role and no responsibilities within the Dayton administration. So it varies pretty vastly.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is, despite Senator Fischbach's unbelievable qualifications, she will likely not have any responsibilities assigned to her by Governor Mark Dayton.
Real quick, regarding Tina Smith, a lot has been made of her role in the administration and how active she was and what a big part she played in negotiating with the legislature on behalf of the administration. In your experience, Nick Zerwas, did you have a lot of interactions with Tina Smith at the legislature? Was she a pretty active representative of the administration?
So, to be clear, I don't serve in leadership, and so I wouldn't be involved in those types of negotiations. My interaction with the lieutenant governor has mainly been at social-type events and have all been very, very positive.
The Velvet Hammer impressed?
She's a very positive person. I have no negative interactions with the lieutenant governor whatsoever. My understanding from visiting with people that were involved, especially this last session in budget negotiations, final negotiations with the governor's office, is that especially towards the end, Governor Dayton kept her out of those negotiations. And she was pretty frustrated with how the session ended and was kind of dismayed at the line item veto that led to the constitutional showdown.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Dayton tends to operate a little bit more calibrated when she is involved. All that being said, she's a nice person. I've had positive interactions with her. Her background as an executive for Planned Parenthood in the abortionist lobby, she is not the right representative for a statewide office. We don't need
that remains to be seen, to be fair.
We don't need both of our senators, our U.S. senators, to be within Minneapolis. We don't need all top elected Democrats to be within the I-694-494 loop. This is a big thumb in the eye to greater Minnesota. And it just shows another example of the governor doubling down on a far left ideology and a far-left agenda that I think is going to be pretty hard for them to hold on to going into November's election.
651-989-5855. All right, so today will be the last roundtable before the holidays. We're going to be off we're going to be off next Friday. So coming up, we have something we've been holding on to, five Christmas holiday traditions, okay, that actually started out really, really dark. So we're going to run through the list. Also, we got the world famous parody song contest with some fantastic prizes for you right now.
Yeah, you're going to win a pair of tickets to this weekend's Vikings Bengals game. The first caller at 651-989-5855 when we come back from break that can correctly identify what stories are being referenced in this week's parody song contest.
Somebody's going to use the force. Maybe Mace Windu.
somebody's gonna kill a droid, but not R2-D2. A Democrat on the Senate floor. It's Doc Jones and not Roy Moore. The driver on the bus does not exist. Not exist, not exist. The driver on the bus does not exist. Hope it don't mow you down. Is that rock and E.T., baby? An alien spaceship, maybe? Or are those scientists crazy? Is that rock and E.T., baby? Our lieutenant governor is Governor Dayton's pal. But soon that seat will be empty, 'cause she is going to D.C. to replace Al.
Justice.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice Andrew, along with comedian Brian Miller, Representative Nick Zerwa, Sam doing a fantastic job this morning. Boy, I guess apparently people love Drew's parody song contest, or they would really like to win some Vikings tickets.
It could be both.
Could be both.
Could be both.
A little bit of both.
We'll find out.
Yep, the lines are full.
651-999-5855 is the phone number. Let's get right to it. I believe the first caller in was Mason, calling from Young America. Mason, good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
It's going great. Are you calling because you love the parody song contest or just because you want this amazing prize?
A little bit of both. How
there you
that?
Go.
There we go.
Right. How about a lot of both?
Good answer. Yeah.
Well done.
I love the penny whistle at the end, by the way.
Thank you.
That was my idea.
All right.
What you got?
So, we got the Star Wars opening weekend. Roy Moore losing to Doug Jones in Alabama. Driverless buses being tested in Minnesota winter weather. The cigar-shaped asteroid that they're testing to see if there's alien technology on it because it's such a weird shape. And then Tina Smith is going to Washington, D.C. to replace Al Franken.
Wow.
Huh? Nailed it.
Nice.
Nailed
done.
There's a lot of people sitting on hold right now that are just screaming at their phones because of you.
Mason, well done. You paid very close attention this week, and I appreciate it. John appreciates it. Sam, I don't think she appreciates it. So
I don't appreciate anything.
I wouldn't be very nice to her when she, but she will get your information.
So I would be nice to me.
And she will,
have the power to hang up
she
on
will
you.
Take care of you, and congratulations. You will be going to the Vikings game this weekend. Well done. Sam, to everybody else that's on hold, we got a couple people on hold. Give them World's Toughest Rodeo tickets.
All right.
All right. So if you're on hold, stay on hold.
Yeah, don't go anywhere.
Sam will get your info, and you're going to get tickets to the World's Toughest Rodeo.
A little
participatory ribbon.
Yeah, I like it. You know, the handful of people that did hang up immediately right after Mason won are really
We don't need
bad
to talk
now.
About them.
Feel sad.
Yeah, that's what you get for hanging up on me. That's what happens.
So this is the last Friday roundtable before we go on the holiday break. We've been holding on to this one for a couple of weeks. It comes out of our website, where unfortunately a lot of people just lost their jobs, cracked.com. I don't know if you heard about it. They had massive layoffs over there. But they put together these really fun lists. And this one here, five holiday traditions that started out dark. So, and I don't know why I thought of comedian Brian Miller. It just seems like one of those things
right up
his alley. So, we'll run through these to close out the show today. Number five on the list, the first Rockefeller Center Christmas tree was covered in garbage. So Christmas trees today, right? You know, huge, especially the Rockefeller, 80, 90 foot specimens, you know, cultivated from around the country. The first Rockefeller tree was a paltry 20 feet and it wasn't even Rockefeller's to begin with. So it was back in the 1930s. The country was suffering from the Great Depression. Not everybody was suffering, though. John D. Rockefeller Jr. was making a good time erecting his own expensive Rockefeller Center at the time. But the builders of Rockefeller Center were acutely aware of how fortunate they were to be earning enough money to last through winter. And so, while waiting in line in the cold for their paycheck, the workers decided to kill time and celebrate their good fortune by erecting basically a Christmas tree. The workers didn't have any Christmas ornaments in their pockets like we do today, so they used what they could find around the site. Tin cans, string, cranberries, garlands made out of paper.
They're just carrying around cranberries?
Yeah, it's a different time, Drew.
It was a different time.
Must have been cheap, right? So Rockefeller Center officially opened 2 years later and decided to adopt the Christmas tree as a new tradition, only bigger and gaudier because rich people.
And less garbage, presumably.
Yeah, yeah.
Presumably, yeah.
But it's an interesting, I mean, it's a fascinating, you know, that's one of the most famous things. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's kind of a Charlie Brown sort of thing, you know?
I could see Michael Keaton starring in a movie about that.
This might be number four of the holiday traditions that started out dark. Might be my favorite one. Overworked police came up with Black Friday. So most people will tell you that the term refers to stores finally turning a much-needed profit from their typical autumn sales slump, therefore moving from the red to black to their balance sheets in one day. The truth is actually much darker. The term Black Friday wasn't some clever marketing pun fabricated by stores, but a dire warning from police signaling the most crime-ridden day of the year.
Weird.
It was first used by the Philadelphia Police Department in the 1950s when they saw the day after Thanksgiving as a hellish marathon to prevent the city from descending into a thunderdome of blood-soaked consumerism and holiday cheer. Back then, the city had to combine Black Friday with their annual Army-Navy game, one of the biggest college football games in the country. And it was so hectic that cops were forbidden from taking the day off, and they had to work ridiculously long shifts with the crowds and mayhem and the heightened level of mayhem and aggression. The name Black Friday eventually got such a bad reputation back in 1961, Philadelphia store owners changed it to Big Friday, but it never caught on to the rest of the country. So in the late 80s, national retailers decided to lean back into the black mark and reclaim the name as a positive thing forever, blackening the sacrifice of the brave men and women who keep Black Friday safe. I always assumed it was the other.
Yeah, the red to black on the marketing on the balance.
Representative Nick Zuros is poo-pooing this.
Yeah, skeptical.
Very.
Crack did just lay off a lot of people, so their accuracy might be in question these days.
Number three, a gift wrapping was an improvised cash grab. There's themed wrapping paper for every occasion, right? Okay, so who do we have to thank for this? That would be the Hallmark Brothers. So the gaudy holiday-themed paper that we know today is a relatively recent invention. Up until the early 20th century, the options for wrapping a gift were a modest variety of gift dressing, red, green, white tissue paper, right? So even if the gift sucked, you could at least dry your eyes on the paper. In the fall of 1917, however, the brothers, Raleigh and Joyce of Hallmark fame, were facing a serious shortage of tissue paper. Spotting some brightly colored paper sheets that were meant to line the insides of envelopes, they put them next to the cash register and sold them for 10 cents a sheet. The sturdy, shiny paper was a hit with customers, and the Halls burned through their stock so fast that they heavily increased their orders the following year. And the success of the wrapping paper led the Halls to realize they could squeeze consumers for much more than just greeting cards, which led them to the monolith of unnecessary crap we know today.
I always like the improvised wrapping paper, like you get the funny pages, you know, people do the newspaper. Or I dated a girl a long time ago whose dad, his wrapping method was he would just put all of their presents in a brown paper grocery bag, fold it over once at the top, two staples, and just hand them this grocery bag, and you would just open the grocery bag.
Merry Christmas.
I was infamous for using the funny pages for wrapping paper for the longest time.
So according to Snopes.com,
the earliest
known use of Black Friday stems from 1951 and referred to the practice of workers calling in sick on the day after Thanksgiving in order to have a four consecutive days off, because that day was not yet commonly offered as a paid day off by employers.
So there's conflicting origin stories of Black Friday.
By 1961, the term Black Friday was being commonly used in derisive sense by Philadelphia police. I deal with that. In 1994, reporter Joseph Barrett recalled how he took part in popularizing the term Black Friday throughout Philadelphia in the early 60s. So,
that's 50-50.
Yeah. Yeah, that's close. Yeah. I don't know. Which version do you like better? They're both kind of depressing.
Yeah. But even this is saying that in Philadelphia, the police were just saying that it was a... It was.
Kind of like this bit.
We're was, ruining Christmas.
Right.
Just yeah, how the true. Knicks stole this bit.
This bit sucks.
Ooh, right. Imagine if you could grow three sizes, you'd be regular.
Now I feel like we got to finish it. All right, the presidential turkey pardon became a tradition to distract from an actual scandal. So throughout history, turkeys became occasional gifts to presidents, okay? With one Rhode Island farmer offering a turkey for every presidential Thanksgiving from 1873 to 1913. The first official pardon of the turkey occurred under Ronald Reagan in 1987. Reagan's administration, and this, I've actually seen this video, if you ever guys ever seen it before. Reagan's administration was embroiled in the Iran-Contra affair, having been caught illegally selling weapons to Iran to fund the fascist death squads in Nicaragua. Military officials, Oliver North and John Poindexter, were charged with facilitating the sale, and were rumors brewing that Reagan was going to pardon them. During the annual turkey presentation, an intrepid reporter demanded an answer as to whether Reagan was going to hand out the Thanksgiving pardon. Reagan deflected the question by pointing to the turkey and saying, him, thereby creating the first official ever turkey pardon.
Can't ever say Reagan wasn't quick on his feet.
Serious, man. Right? Imagine if he had Twitter.
I bet that joke was not as well received by Oliver North. He's like, no, really? Me? No, not the turkey. Me?
Turkey?
Now, though Reagan didn't pardon his final turkey in 1988, George H.W. Bush resumed the practice in 89, and every turkey since has been pardoned.
But to be fair, that turkey in 88 was delicious.
Right, that one was really good.
Now, the last
Reagan
one,
was hungry.
The last one on here, we're not going to have a ton of time to get into, but it does open up a conversation that we got into earlier in the week off the air. Modern Christmas songs were written by deeply depressed people. And when you, it really is, I'll send you guys all the link. But when you get into a lot of the stories of Santa Claus is coming to town, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, these were all essentially really depressing songs until they were adopted and changed and turned into the classics that we know. I bring it up, though, because I thought this, and we actually had the same conversation on the drive to go watch The Last Jedi, but Drew was listening to one of our sister stations,
mm-hmm.
and somebody had played Go Tell It on the Mountain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one of the, I was listening to it, and it was actually a different talk show, and they were doing Christmas bumper music mm-hmm. on the talk show, and they come back with Go Tell It on the Mountain. And the host was like, we're supposed to be doing Christmas bumper music. And the producer's like, this is a Christmas song. And the host disputed it and said, no, it's not. And it's the line is, you know, go tell it on the mountain, Jesus Christ is born.
Oh, right.
And, and the producer's like, that's what makes it Christmassy.
No,
that's a church song.
Yeah.
That's not, there's a difference between, you know, church songs and Christmas songs. That's not a Christmas. They had this whole dispute on the show about whether Go Tell It on the Mountain was a Christmas song.
That is very much a Christmas song.
No,
oh,
it's a
disagree.
Song.
It's a spiritual, I would call, you know, but I don't think that's a Christmas song.
No. I mean,
there's a way in a manger.
Right.
So if a bunch of people showed up on your porch singing Go Tell It on the Mountain, you think they were there to hand you pamphlets and information.
Right.
You wouldn't be like, oh, get him some hot chocolate and let's talk.
You can have several Christmas songs be Christian songs, not all Christian songs about Jesus
yes,
are Christmas
exactly.
songs.
Exactly. There are plenty of, like, Silent Night, obviously a very religious song, obvious Christmas songs. Right. Go Tell It on the Mountain. Like, right. Old Rugged Cross, not a Christmas song.
Yeah.
Amazing Grace.
No,
Amazing
yeah, exactly. Grace, I was thinking exactly the same one.
Of course, and no one's saying it. No. Go to a child's Christmas program.
No.
They're going to have.
Hard pass.
Which one are you starring in this year?
I've been to a lot of them.
Which one am I starring in? I always wanted to be a shepherd. They always made me be the lamb.
Yeah. This year
I'm surprised they didn't make you the baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This year he's the lobster.
Appearing in the Elk River nativity scene this year.
That's what you get for not watching Star Wars.
He'll be there from 3 to 5. All swaddled up.
It's going to be cold.
No, you'll be swaddled up. You won't be that cold.
So I was like, is the baby Jesus drinking a rum and Coke?
Hey, we should mention that this is the last roundtable before Christmas. First off, thanks to you guys for coming in every week.
Yeah,
we all really appreciate it and have such a great time on Fridays. And Brian Miller, while you're here, too, I want to remind everybody, go to acmecomedycompany.com and put your reservations in for New Year's Eve. We're going to have a great time. I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm getting out of the house.
Really fun time. John's going to be there. Sam's going to be there. I'm going to be there. Nick, have you heard from the bride yet?
I'm talking to the bride.
All right.
So I'm hopeful.
So we're hopeful. Hopefully Nick will be there. But it's going to be headlined by Brian Miller and Nate Abshire. You're getting two headliners for the price of one. Really no better way to kick in the new year.
It's going to be great. And like I said, that'd be a great thing to do on your New Year's Eve. But if you can't make it for New Year's Eve, we're going from December 26th to the 31st. We have nine shows Tuesday through Sunday.
All week long.
Two shows Friday, two shows Saturday, two shows Sunday. So a lot of opportunities.
If you're looking for something to get comedian Brian Miller for Christmas, I don't know if you heard, but Walmart is selling a marijuana Christmas tree to light up your room.
Oh, Walmart?
Weed marijuana leaf tree this season. Ornaments and bow are not included in the 7-foot faux Tannenbaum, which has a retail value of $250.
Tannenbaum.
Oh, my guy can get it for
$250. Yeah, seriously, why did they do that?
They call it Tannenbaum.
It should have been 5-foot old Tannenbaum. Wow.
Disappointed.
That's disappointing.
Way to end the week on disappointment.
Have a great week, everybody. We'll be back on Monday. We've got Andrew Langer,
Merry Christmas.
Voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen, and Jason Flores from Americans for Prosperity all on Monday's show. Go Vikings.
May the force be with you.
Happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday,
Happy
Nick
birthday,
Nick.
Happy birthday, Nick.
Hey, you're really little.
Go tell it on the mountain.
Dilly dilly. Open up the door. I'll get it myself. I don't give me generation. Give me truth.
Good morning, Jeremy.